listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888.
And here I am again. It is Dr. Peter Bragan. I'm glad to be back on the air on Progressive Radio Network. My guest today, as I was saying earlier, is Sartan Weinrob from New York City, a psychologist, and I'll be talking to him in a minute or two. And the next week, Pamela Glasner, the author of Finding Emmaus, who is just a marvelous woman who looks deeply into the issues of empathy through her novel that spans several hundred years, including the sordid and abusive history of psychiatry. This show is new, of course, and so I'll tell you again what our thrust is here. There are really two thrusts to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour. One is that the traditional psychiatric tools of diagnoses and drugs often do more harm than good. And the second theme is that there are lots better ways for you to get help, for you to help yourself, the therapist to work. And it's really a matter often of life and death physically, because psychiatric drugs, electroshock, hospitals, are not good for people. We know more and more about psychiatric drugs shortening the lifespan. Why, that was on no less a show than CNN's Doctor Show a couple of days ago. We know that all drugs modify the brain, and that's not really good for a human being and doesn't allow for the full expression of your life. On the other hand, we know that understanding ourselves, knowing ourselves, is the way ultimately to personal freedom, to making decisions, to taking responsibility, to finding the values that make a difference for us in our lives. For me, those values are encapsulated more than anything else in taking responsibility to be a loving human being, to take as much joy in life as we can, to give as much as we can, and to receive along the way. But with the real emphasis on what do we have to give? What is it that we are supposed to be giving to the world? And how can we enjoy that? How can we share that with other human beings? My guest, Sartan Weinrob, is a psychotherapist, PhD, in New York City. And I know he's been on a bit of a quest himself to figure these things out, as we all have. And he's going to tell us a little bit about that, keeping in mind that this show is about what matters to you, what can help you with your growth, and what you might expect if you go to a therapist is going to really bring you and your loved ones a better life. Sartan, how are you today?
Wonderful, Peter. It's so good to be here with you.
You sound good. We had a little glitch in the beginning of the show, maybe from my end. Technically, I'm not sure. Now, you've had a bit of experience in your own life where you've grown from one viewpoint on how to help people to another viewpoint on how to help people. Maybe you could share that, and keep in mind that we're talking about what's going to help the individuals listening to us today on the show.
Sure, Peter. Well, let me do a little backup, if I may, which is I began my entry into mental health as a client. I think I saw my first therapist when I was about 8 or 10 years old, because my parents were divorced and they wanted me to seek help. They saw I was acting strange after the divorce. So I really think that my interest in humanistic approaches to working with people began because of my own experiences as a child. And I grew up actually from the time I was 8 years old until I was 18, and then all the way up until I entered graduate school in my late 20s, I probably saw around, let's say, between 4 or maybe 10 different therapists. So I had a wide variety of views and opinions and experienced a wide variety of caregivers.
But how many of them do you feel you remember fondly?
I have to say I remember all of them fondly.
That's a miracle.
Maybe I was lucky.
Yes.
But what that did for me was it made me aware that I was when I decided to enter this work, that I wanted to do it for to carry on the kind of experiences and to help others receive the kind of support and caring that I know I received. At the same time, though, I have to tell you, I never really questioned the various therapists I saw. I never questioned them about what their backgrounds were, what their training was. I just did the work. And separately, I had my own opinions forming, mainly from films like Woody Allen films and television, where you'd see funny scenarios of people lying on couches and therapists being either very impersonal or maybe overly personal. And so when I decided to become a psychotherapist, a psychologist, and looked for training, I was interested in mainly what I had heard was the most intellectual, which is what is known as psychoanalysis. Growing up, that was the philosophy that I had always believed was for the intellectual elite, and that's what I wanted to be. And so in my graduate studies, I began to study it. And then when I finished my graduate studies, I came to New York City partly because this city is known for its psychoanalytic training programs. And when I'm talking about psychoanalysis, I'm talking about theories that evolved from Sigmund Freud and, of course, are very varied today. But getting to your point now, in the midst of my training, I discovered that there is a huge alternative world of mental health views that growing up I had never considered, and during my graduate and then postgraduate training I never considered. It was only once I began working with clients in individual settings and clinics finishing my training that I really saw that there is a big difference between the theories we read, what we see on television, and what it takes to actually connect to a human being face to face. And it was at that point that I was drawn towards humanistic psychology, in particular the work of the American psychologist Carl Rogers. He's also the founder of what's called client-centered therapy, but today is known as the person-centered approach. And from that training, I then investigated more and more, and unfortunately, and I think you're probably aware of this, Peter, humanistic perspectives in psychotherapy that really focus on empathy over things like diagnosis and medication and applying the medical model, but focusing on empathy in the face of those other three things is unfortunately in the minority in this day and age in our country. And so discovering that it's such a minority motivated me to start our center, which is called the New York Person-Centered Resource Center. And I'm the director of the center, and we strive to offer humanistic approaches to psychotherapy, and it's my understanding we're the only center in New York and one of the only one in the U.S. that does that today.
That in itself is an astonishing fact, that you have to struggle to find a group of therapists who actually believe that the most fundamental issues are really about human beings understanding each other, caring about each other, and taking an empathic approach to each other. Because this is not just about therapy. It's about how you're going to relate to folks in all of life. And I didn't even realize that, Sartan, even among psychologists, of course, I'm a psychiatrist, and among psychiatrists there are probably a handful in the world who think that empathic understanding and learning about an individual's values and helping them develop a stronger sense of themselves, that's the key to life. Almost all psychiatrists believe in diagnosis and drugs. But you're saying that even in psychology, it's really hard to find somebody who stands up and says that they want to work on empathic principles.
Definitely, Peter. And I would say that it's a real epidemic. Something I discovered in my training when I was in the midst of studying psychoanalysis shocked me, and I'm going to just tell you what that was briefly. In the world of psychoanalysis, there is a theory known as transference. And in fact, that theory has pervaded most schools of psychotherapy and even the mainstream thinking. I think most of your listeners are probably familiar with what that term transference is and what it means. And what it means, briefly, is that when people come into therapy, very often they portray relationships or behaviors towards their therapists that are not really, or supposedly not really, about what's going on in the room, not in relation to the therapists themselves, but in relation to some past experience. So they bring in past, usually trauma, negative experience, and they enact them in the room, in the here and now. And that's a theory that I grew up understanding and believing in, and then when I began practicing, looking for, implying. But in the midst of my practice, I realized that theory, while interesting and useful in the abstract, in the present, did not help people. It didn't help people to tell them that what they were saying or feeling with me in the room was not about us. doesn't mean that it was about us either. We'll get back to that. But my point is the concept of transference was one of the first fundamental theories I had to question. And since I have, my whole way of being has changed. Instead of looking at people as maybe even diseased or disabled because of past traumas, I see them now as people just like you and I struggling to live better. And it's questioning a basic concept like transference that's allowed me to do that. Now, also, as a professional, I don't take home a lot of the conflicts people present when they're with me. In other words, I try to offer empathy as opposed to sympathy. That's a big concept within all therapists, I think, for thinking about something like that. So there has to be a middle ground. But my point is, I was able to question some fundamentally held views, and that allowed me to free myself of the medical system. It was not easy, though, I have to tell you. A lot of my friends and colleagues at the time questioned me and didn't understand how I could question something as sacred as the concept of transference. That led to other questioning.
Yeah, it's funny how one cult holds one thing sacred and another holds another. I decided way, way back in my early training, I was invited to, you know, apply to the Boston Psychoanalytic Institute, and I turned them down. I was already sensing that there was something cultish about it. And I think, you know, one of the things to me that's so important if you seek help and you're giving help is there's no place for it in one-upping the client or the patient. There's no place for embarrassing them, making them feel less. And if you're sitting there with a concept that you think rules the world and it has nothing to do with what your client's thinking, it's a real one-up position to be in. And if you're feeling your client is reacting to you on the basis of somebody from the past and they think they're reacting to you the way you are, again, it's humiliating to even just sort of say that to them. Yet we all do run into situations where we feel like, hey, it's not me. It's not me you're reacting to. And if I run into that with a client or with a lawyer on the phone that I'm working with, or with somebody in my life that I love, I like to start out by saying, hey, have I done something? Is it me? Have I done something to make you so angry? Have I done something to make you distrustful? And if the answer is no, then I might feel free to say, well, you know, you're making me feel like I've done something wrong. You're making me feel like I can't be trusted. So can we start a conversation about that and see what that's all about? And almost all people are going to be willing to look more if you've asked in the beginning if it's about you, and sometimes it will be about you, and then you have to own up about how you're behaving. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, wonderful, Peter. I think that what's difficult about this whole issue is that if you do take away something like transference or diagnosis or playing the expert with a client, a lot of therapists, at least in my situation, a lot of psychotherapists, counselors, they feel they don't know then what they have to offer in the therapeutic relationship. And this is an important question. It has such a simple answer in my mind, yet one that scares a lot of people, which is having a real, honest relationship and a communication under the therapeutic constraints is what good therapy is made of. But people feel that that's not enough, that to just have a good conversation, a real, honest conversation, as I hear you're doing, Peter, people will say, oh, that's not real therapy. That's not going to fix the problem for me. On the other hand, I don't know, they usually don't know what would fix the problem other than maybe giving advice. But I think therapists across the spectrum agree advice is not good therapy.
Oh, I give advice. I may be a wild man. I try to be helpful. So,
but hold on, though. Peter, you know, I think that tell me this is wrong. I think the advice you give is different because it's from the relationship.
Yes, it is.
And that's
you know, like Bill, I think you've been really banging your head against a brick wall trying to get love from people who are unloving, and maybe we could examine that and think about it. You think that's true? Do you think that's true, Bill? You know, so I mean, I give advice in that sense, or I might say to somebody, you know, you've had a lot of bad experiences today with people. Let me suggest that you just try greeting each person for the rest of today and tomorrow. Just try greeting each person as if you're seeing the God in them, as if you're seeing something good in them, as if you would like their experience with you to be better. And so I'll give advice. The thing is, if you give that kind of advice, then you've got to live by it in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, otherwise, your patient's going to come in or your client the next day and say, hey, I got these good results, but I see you're kind of grumpy today and you didn't seem glad to see me. So it's
but Peter,
therapy
you said,
should be a two-way street.
You said something very important now, that you have to live by what you say.
And I think absolutely.
That's a very difficult principle for a lot of working psychotherapists. It's very difficult to carry on the same principles that you want to encourage others, because you're asking for a higher level of living, a more conscious, aware, loving way of being. And that's not easy.
Well, you know, it's not easy to break through, maybe, and to leave your own stuff behind and to begin to live by principles where you're always trying to come back to things like, is what I'm going to say going to really advance the relationship or just take out my own feelings on the other person? Is what I'm about to say going to make me feel more powerful or make the person I'm talking to feel stronger? But once you decide to think that way, you're going to fail a lot, of course, but it becomes easier. Life becomes incredibly easier, and being a therapist becomes incredibly easier when you decide you always want to treat that other human being not just how you would want to be treated, but just by the highest principles you know of. And for me, Sartan, I think of therapy as a kind of mini-utopia. I was talking to my students at SUNY Oswego about that in our last class, that therapy is it's an ideal situation that we set up in which we're protected by the limits on the therapy. We can't get involved with each other. We can't see each other outside of therapy. We can't. We just can't do things that would be intimate in the ordinary sense of the word physically, but gosh, we can talk about anything and we can share a lot of our feelings, providing the emphasis is on what's helping the person who's paying, providing the emphasis on the other person, we can be sharing a lot. But once you get straight that this is supposed to be a really utopian environment in which you're really at your best and you're hoping to allow the other person to see what being at one's best is really, really like, at least for these few minutes a day, actually it gets so much easier. And I don't ever experience what other therapists call burnout, and I see a lot of therapists experiencing burnout because there's something very laborious about treating the other person not as an equal. It's very laborious.
I agree with you, Peter, completely, and I have the same experience that you do, that I don't know what that means, burnout. I mean, I know I can get physically tired because I'm just working too much because I love it so much. But I do see other colleagues, as you're suggesting, that burn out, and mainly it's because I think that they are afraid to make this kind of empathetic act a way of living as opposed to just a job where they turn it on and off.
I really would urge the folks listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, which is what you're doing. You're listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. My guest is Sartan Weinraub, a friend of mine, a therapist who has a clinic in downtown New York, Sartan Weinraub, and who also, incidentally, is our local director of the Manhattan, New Jersey area for the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy. My wife Ginger and I have set up the center. It's a nonprofit in New York, and you can get to it through empathictherapy.org. Empathictherapy.org, and you can look up the advisory council, and you'll find Sartan Weinraub and his contact information right there on the advisory council. But I think it's really important for therapists and for patients and clients who get together to know that therapy is supposed to be a good experience. And when you walk into that therapist's office, you should feel welcome. You should feel like this person's actually glad to see me. Because doing therapy is a very sacred trust. It's a very special and honorific position to be in, with a lot of ability to harm folks, to embarrass folks, and a lot of ability to undo the harm and embarrassment they've been through by appreciating them and helping them be more of what they can be. So to me, when you're if you're viewing therapy as, hey, I'm really glad to see this person. How can I help you today? I hope I was helpful last week. If not, what can we do to make this more helpful? If you're just approaching this in an open way and thinking about what does this other human being need from me that I can give within the bounds of therapy, doing therapy feels more like a privilege than a labor. And I'm so glad you feel the same way, Sergeant.
I do, Peter. And I have to say, going back to my original concerns and my larger concerns about the psychiatric community, the idea of the medical model being applied to mental illness is one of the issues that I think has caused counselors, psychotherapists to depersonalize themselves. Because during their training, they're taught that they should. Very often, I know very few graduate, postgraduate training programs. I mean, there are a few, but very few, that actually encourage people to live this stuff and to become empathetic and to open the door and be welcoming, as you're suggesting. That's a novel idea.
It's a sad irony on professionalism and on what people expect from each other that you and I are having a novel discussion about human beings being treated with respect and care and finding out what we really need in life and finding someone we can talk to about it in an honest and straightforward way. It really is a sad circumstance. And the other thing that struck me about therapy that, well, many things that aren't talked about enough is if you're seeking therapy, by far and away, what matters more than anything is your sense of responsibility for taking charge of that experience. Your sense that you really, really want to grow and take charge of your life and leave the junk behind and move toward a more positive attitude, that you really, really want to do that. And if that is your attitude, you're going to spot the therapist right away who isn't helping you, and you should just move on. And you'll also spot pretty readily the therapist that is helping you. But this is exactly the same in relationships. You know, people that I'm working with and they're having trouble finding a loving relationship and they've read all these books and the books tell them how to be cautious and how what you do on don't do on the first date and what you should expect and not expect and so on and so forth. And once you get into that, it really doesn't work very well. And I give the same advice, and I do give advice that we're talking about here in terms of being a therapist. If you want to build your life around people who are loving and caring, then be loving and caring to the people you meet. And it's not that they're going to take advantage of you. A lot of people who want to take advantage, you're going to run from somebody who's loving and caring. You're going to, in fact, if you're dating and you're looking and you're being loving and caring toward the people you meet, why, it's going to be like a some sort of a farm instrument going through wheat. You know, it's just going to spread apart and knock down half of the folks you come across because they're going to run from being loving and caring. The wonderful thing about therapy is that it's protective. And you can build a caring relationship with almost everyone who comes to see you, if they're voluntary, if they're choosing to come and they're voluntary. And I advise, again, the same thing in life. You know, don't hold back because you're afraid. Because you hold back because you're afraid, you're going to be with people who hold back because they're afraid, and then you're going to have relationships with people holding back who are afraid. I think we should be real. Everywhere we go, to whatever extent we can be, to whatever extent it's not dangerous outright for us. And in that way, we'll build more relationships of people that want to be open and be treated as equals and be respectful and caring toward each other.
Peter, I have to say, it's my experience that most of the time, people who come into this profession, maybe like myself, have come because they're so used to giving. They've maybe been required to give at a young age, and maybe be adult before their time. And so it's a profession full of people who are very familiar to giving, but not necessarily practicing giving to themselves and taking care of themselves and loving themselves. So I would also add that it's time to step back and look at our self-care and say, what do we need in order to carry on all the loving and giving that we're putting out?
I agree with you 100%. I think that psychiatrists who go into therapy, who become therapists, I want to bring that up in the next hour, because I think the people who become psychiatrists nowadays are very different than the people who become therapists. We're going to take a break now from the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. See you in a bit.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This is John Rappaport inviting you to my new radio show on the Progressive Radio Network, which will air every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm an investigative reporter. I've spent 20 years researching health and medical fraud, deep politics. I'll have lots of very knowledgeable guests on the show who have information to share with you so that you can live a more healthy and informed life. Join me every Wednesday on PRN. That's 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the John Rappaport Show. See you then.
Join us, Bruce and Marianne Curtis, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network for Truth and Freedom. We present provocative conversations with the world's most brilliant minds in the areas of holistic health, spiritual wisdom, politics, and a host of other topics. Some of our topics include the latest work in non-invasive therapy on the brain, the truth beneath the global economic meltdown, healing power of the breath, and the sublime truth beyond all religious traditions. In this age of transformation, we need to look beneath the surface appearance of things to see the underlying reality. From material that is always illuminating and often liberating, tune in to Truth and Freedom on the Progressive Radio Network Fridays at 3 p.m.
Ellen Kamai, co-host of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Sig. Dr. Eugene Zamperone and I have been deeply involved with indigenous cultures and combined traditional knowledge with the latest research in natural health care. Join us each week on PRN from 1 to 2 p.m. every Monday. We'll bring you authors, professors, researchers, and activists who are committed to bringing you the latest information which you can use to ensure maximum wellness for yourself, yourselves, and your family. Tune in to Progressive Radio Network every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or anytime by visiting the archives. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And you are listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Show. And the music of Vangelis. My guest today is Sartan Weinrob, who is a psychologist, PhD in New York City. Hi, Sartan, you there?
Peter, I'm here. I want to say I'm a big fan of Vangelis. I'm very impressed.
Well, good. Sartan and I have just been getting to know each other in the past few months, and we continually find ourselves on such a similar wavelength about therapy. Despite many differences, I'm a lot older. I live in a different part of the world. I was trained in psychiatry, and he was trained in psychology. One of the points that I think is really interesting is that Sartan was saying that so many psychologists go into psychotherapy because they have an excess of giving. They care a lot. They do have a lot of empathic tendencies. And I think also as a part of that, like Sartan, many of them have been in therapy and found it was helpful and So they want to become helpful people. I think all of this is the best. This is what produces the best in the profession. But if you're going to a psychiatrist, an MD, this is not what you're going to find anymore. When I was in medical school, it was similar to this, but we're going back to the 60s. Usually you became a psychiatrist when you ran into trouble in medical school or at some point in your life got some therapy, realized it helped, and made up your mind not to be a surgeon or a pediatrician or an internist, but to be a psychiatrist. Nowadays, young men and women go into psychiatry for totally different reasons. They go in because they like being more powerful than other people. They like having the ability to control other people. They think emotional disturbances are diseases rather than spiritual emotional phenomena. They think drugs are a good thing, and they may be taking drugs, psychiatric drugs, and think they're a good thing. So when you go into a psychiatrist's office now, you're more likely to find someone who's looking at you like a dried bug under a microscope and with a pin through your heart, and the pin is psychiatric diagnosis. You're not so likely to be stepping into the office of somebody who became a therapist and is a caring individual. And again, and I hope some of my students are listening. They're supposed to all at some point be listening to the show, either live or on archive, and our show is archived. The biggest mistakes that good therapists make are the mistakes of caring too much, breaking boundaries. And if you're going to be a caring therapist, and if you're a patient and you care a lot about your therapist, remember the boundaries. It's what makes the process work. And stepping outside of it is almost always going to be a disaster. Sardin, your thoughts about that?
Peter, I agree with you 100%. And what's very interesting to me is that most young people who come in to talk about training to be a psychotherapist want to focus on ways to control their boundaries, what to do if someone asks about your personal life, what to do when sexual tension issues come up, what to do with issues of shaking hands and just other basic things. But 9 times out of 10, to me, the bigger issue is person's self-care. I think if you look at people that do break boundaries, they're people that aren't taking care of themselves separately from their therapeutic practice. And if you don't...
Definitely.
If you're not working on your own health, working on your own relationships, your own spirituality, it's very hard to prevent those deficits in your own life from invading your practice.
Yes. So it's a good thing for your therapist to care about you, and it's good for you to care about your therapist. But the moment it begins to feel like, hey, maybe there's something romantic that could be fulfilled, or even a friendship, or even going into business, forget it. It's not only unethical. Your therapist is not only committing an unethical act and a dangerous act. It's not going to be good for you in the long run. What's created in therapy, while emotionally real, is nonetheless artificial in that it is based upon the restrictions of therapy, and those restrictions should remain in place.
And Peter, I just want to say by restrictions, I take it you mean by the fact that this is, in my mind, a relationship, a real relationship, but a specific relationship, a relationship that's specific to the time and place that you meet and does not necessarily translate outside of that room. A lot of people...
Well, and in fact, is not likely to translate outside that room without disaster.
But you're right, I agree with you, but what I want to say about that, because it's a very interesting point, a lot of people will say to me, oh, I feel, that maybe they're writing a check, paying for the therapy, they'll say, I feel I'm paying you to be my friend. And that there's some that they believe there's some sort of negative quality because this is a very specific relationship. And over the years, I've learned I don't agree with that. I used to question that myself and say, well, maybe it is. This is some sort of fake friendship. But in reality, this is a very useful friendship that's not fake, but that is time and place specific. It can have as much power as other kinds of powerful relationships, but it is specific and needs to be so that a wide variety of people can be seen over a course of a day and many people can be helped.
Yeah, I think if someone brought that up, that I feel like I'm paying for friendship, I would want to have a talk about him. It's the beginning of a conversation about what is therapy, and if indeed they're paying for emotional support at a difficult time, that's not a friendship. It's a professional relationship that's giving you emotional support at a time where you're not getting it elsewhere. And so it's just important, I think, to use that opportunity to talk about what is the relationship about. Are they not getting what they feel is more than a casual friend? And so on. So I just think it's one more thing to chat about and find out what the person is thinking about. We have a caller, and Sartan Weinrob is on with me, and I'm Peter Bregan, and let's hear from Michelle, who's in Binghamton, New York, which I think is just about an hour away from where I am in Ithaca, New York. My practice is in Ithaca, New York. Michelle, are you there?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, Michelle.
I'm here.
Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. Do you know
you
are the first caller who I didn't know, because this show is just beginning, and on the first session, my caller was a professional colleague of mine, and I welcomed him onto the show. But you're actually, you'll go down in history as the first spontaneous caller on our show. Hi.
Oh, I'm impressed. Well, I've read your... I'm getting an echo.
Katie, can you help her with that?
I can hear you just fine, Michelle. I think it sounds fine.
Yeah,
to
you're okay.
Well, I read Dr. Bregan's books years and years ago, and so I've been following you online also, and I told the screener about a question I had, so I guess I'll stick to the question I gave the screener.
That would be fair.
So the question is, as far as the therapist taking care of his or herself, isn't the money enough? You know, that they make a substantial salary, you know, to get enough rest and so forth and a few luxuries, and that's it, you know, that's...
I could jump in there for a second, Peter.
Sure.
I'll listen to you offline, or
I don't know, but let me say this, Michelle. Certainly, income is necessary and is important so that, at least for myself, so I can maintain my practice. Without income, there's no way to pay the rent, and if I don't pay the rent, especially in certain neighborhoods, I won't have the variety of clients that I'd like to see.
Right. I agree. You need a substantial amount of money.
But there's a separate issue also, and that is that I think if you look at anyone in life who is, let's say people who make a lot of money, I really don't believe that they're any happier than anyone else. I mean, this is, people say this all the time. So you can take a therapist who's making a lot of money, but it does not mean they're taking care of themselves. That does not translate to self-care, true self-care, relational self-care, spiritual self-care, physical health self-care.
Uh-huh. I think, let me interrupt a sec. I think that Michelle... There's a distinction that we need to make, which is taking care of yourself in the therapy as a therapist, and certainly getting paid is a central part of that. But I think Sartan's talking about the necessity of the therapist taking care of himself or herself outside the therapy so that needs don't come in beyond getting paid.
That is correct.
I think that's what you're saying.
Yes.
The other way, Michelle, that I think of also that the therapist should take care of himself and that this is good for the client is that I like to have a good relationship. I don't want to have a fighting, angry relationship with the people I work with. I don't want to be attacked. So I try to create a really good relationship in therapy that's one where we are enjoying each other even though we're doing hard work, and in which there isn't a lot of painful conflict between me and my client or my client and me. And, of course, I'm not always going to be successful at that. But for this therapy to be successful, I very much believe that it should be a place where both people are respecting each other. And I think that's another way of taking care of oneself as a therapist. But you're basically right on target, which is that what the therapist gets is paid. That's the way the client takes care of the therapist. They meet the contract. Is that answering your question?
Oh, yes. I just want to say that I just wish there were more therapists available, like Dr. Bregan and Dr. Weinrob. Is that your name?
Yes, thank you.
And thank you. I won't keep you any longer,
okay.
but...
Thanks for calling in the show.
Are there any therapists in Binghamton that have with your philosophy?
Well, my phone number is in the phone book and on my website. Give me a call, and I'll give you a call and talk to you about it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, Michelle.
Bye-bye.
Peter, I think Michelle has a good point also, that it is difficult to find therapists of this persuasion. If you call any classic avenue, a clinic, a hospital, a mental health setting, you don't really know what you're getting. And I would say 9 times out of 10, you're getting people that are not empathetically oriented. Finding a therapist is a very difficult process, one that I wish could be easier, but it's just there's no easy way other than to maybe interview a number of people if you're able to.
Well, I think, you know, both you and I are trying to train folks, and that's part of my new orientation. Is I'm best known for criticizing psychiatry, diagnosis, drugs, shock treatment, biological theories, and so on. But I'm trying to help people become therapists who can be more themselves as therapists, enjoy doing therapy, and give more of use to people by being empathic and caring and really having a relationship between equals. But there isn't a lot of that. There's not a lot of training like that. And so that's what I'm reaching out for now. And that's a part of what our Empathic Therapy Center is about. And again, the center that my wife Ginger and I have set up this year is called the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy. And we're going to have our annual meeting April 8th, 9th, and 10th in Syracuse, New York, and everybody's welcome. It's not just for professionals. Anybody concerned about these issues is really welcome to come. Sartan will be there giving a talk and meeting people, and he's going to bring some of the folks he works with as students and other professionals up from Manhattan. And I just think it's incredibly important for us to be reaching out and talking to people about what's good in therapy, what you should look for, and how you can be as a therapist. It's all the same package. There's no mystery here. There's no mystery where you talk to a therapist and teach him one thing and talk to a client and teach him another thing. We're all in this human boat together. And in therapy, because of the careful rules and regulations that govern it, we can really be ourselves and be at our best as persons.
It's interesting, Peter. I take breaks in between my clients, and that's another way that I have self-care. And people often wonder, they'll say, what is that therapist doing in between clients? And the reality is I'm kind of centering myself, getting in touch with myself, looking at myself so that I'm fresh and ready for the next person.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, psychiatry is not behaving that way. You go to your local psychiatrist now who, remember, is medically trained and has gone to medical school and residency, in contrast, and that's me, in contrast to Sartan Weinrob, who's a psychologist who hasn't gone to medical school. He's actually gone into training to be a psychologist and a psychotherapist. And these are very different things, right? And especially different now that psychiatry has really given up its humanity to the drug companies. And your average psychiatrist is seeing 5 or maybe even more patients an hour than you know, just racking up the med checks, which is supposed to be like about 15 minutes long and will be covered by insurance. We have another friend on the line, a mutual friend, Doug Bauer. Hello, Doug.
Hello. Wanted to check in with you.
Hey, Doug.
Yes.
You're becoming a regular
on my show. How are you doing? Doug Bauer is another wonderful man who's a PhD psychologist in counseling. He's a counselor. He's also a minister. And we haven't gone much into spirituality today. And Doug is also a member of our organization. Hi, Doug.
I want to say Doug is also a lover of Carl Rogers, I believe. Is that right?
Right, that's right. Sartan and I met at Warm Springs a number of years ago at the annual person-centered workshop down there.
So what's on your mind today as you're listening to me and Sartan?
You two were talking about the relationship in therapy, and it triggered an image that I had about that, and I call it kind of the front porch experience. where the relationship is such that you're sitting down with a good friend and y'all are talking about whatever, and it just time goes by real quickly, and you're anything could come up. It might be traumatic, it may not be, but I've experienced these kinds of occasions in counseling and therapy where the client just opens up so much and the therapist is so open that it becomes a very spontaneous, open dialogue where really neat things unfold. And I call it kind of a front porch experience, where it's like being on the front porch with one of your best friends, and you're liable to talk about anything. And there's warmth in there, there's understanding there, and respect on those experiences.
So, what years were you trained in, Doug?
Over a variety of years.
Okay. Did you get much encouragement to have a front porch experience? Did you get much encouragement to actually connect with the person you're working with and really try to arrive at a real understanding, a mutual understanding of what's going on?
In terms of counseling, yes, because I was fortunate to start my training at the University of Georgia in the counseling psych department, and it was very humanistically oriented.
Was that when Gerald Bozarth was running it?
Right, Gerald's...
Good man.
Introduced me to the person-centered approach, really. I'd heard about it for years, but I was fortunate to have that warm kind of training, accepting kind of training, rather than the institutional, bureaucratic, I'm the expert, we got to fix it for you, you got to do what I say to do kind of stuff. So I was fortunate with that.
Now, were you encouraged, though, to limit the kinds of things you asked or said to your clients, like, you know, just giving positive feedback, not asking questions? Or were you encouraged to interact on a kind of normal way?
Well, in terms of the training I got in the person-centered approach, I'd say would be limited in terms of giving advice, in terms of giving feedback, but the focus was more on understanding the person who was there for counseling and psychotherapy. Now, I tended to rebel against that.
Good for you.
Like the spontaneous thing, and there might be some advice in that.
But I think it's good for students to learn techniques. It focuses them on the things they say and the things they ask and the communications they make. But ultimately, I think that most of the therapists I know who enjoy their work and seem to help people have a very kind of more down-to-earth what's going to be helpful to you today attitude toward the people who come to see them. And at least I hope so.
I agree, Peter. And in fact, I would say that's something I strive for. But I think, Doug, I think you're lucky you're out in Georgia where you have more of that feel overall.
I think that's very true. I think it's very, very true that folks more in the country, folks more away from the urban centers, folks with less Harvard training than I've had, are often much more real in the way they relate to each other and in the way they relate to their clients and their patients. Let's talk a little bit about spirituality. We haven't talked much about that today, and I like to get some of that in. And I think both of you will enjoy tuning in next week, by the way, because next Monday, I want to remind the audience, I'm going to have Pamela Glasner as my guest. Pamela is, again, a friend, but a novelist, the author of Finding Emmaus. It's just read the first page, and you will keep reading Finding Emmaus. And it's roughly about an empath and about the role of empaths in human history. And it's told from the view of this empath. And it also gets into the, what she would say is just the abusive, and I would say, history of psychiatry and how it treats those of us who are more empathic and who maybe have a struggle with whatever our gifts are. Because so many people who get labeled, particularly who get labeled schizophrenic, are people who are struggling with the gifts they have and their inability to handle them. One of my dear friends who's no longer with us, Kevin McCready, who is a Catholic and a psychologist, who thought of himself as a Catholic psychologist, he thought that psychosis and hallucinations was too open a conduit to the spiritual world and to God. Now, I don't necessarily go there, but I admire that he went there, and I think we need to be open to what is life really about, and not to take wonderful young people who have breakdowns and to pigeonhole them as schizophrenics requiring medication, rather than the way I view them, which is broken poets. I think the folks who get labeled schizophrenic have imaginations, and those imaginations are broken by their suffering and their feelings of inadequacy and the shame that they've been through and the lack of love and their need for love. And out of their mouths then come these broken poems, which aren't very interesting often because they are broken. But behind them, behind those broken ideas about mom being an alien or dad not being the father or the conspiracy and the plan that's been made for them by others, behind all that is really a poetic, frightened human being. So just some random thoughts of mine, guys, on what's going on. You're listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. My guest is Sartin Weinrob, who is a psychologist in Manhattan. You can find him in the phone book. And what's your phone number?
212-989-6086.
And you've been talking to my guest, another friend, Doug Bauer from Georgia. And we've got just a few more minutes to go. Any real quick parting comments from either of you? And then I'll wind up the show.
Well, let me just jump in real quick, Doug, and I know you have a lot to say because I consider Doug to be a very spiritual person. In my practice, spirituality is something that is always looming but difficult to address because I see people from so many different religions and spiritual backgrounds. But I will say it always comes up and it's always present, especially when people really feel safe and when the relationship, that they recognize it to be a real relationship within the therapeutic context. That's all.
And thank you. It's always wonderful to spend any time with you at all, Sartin. And Doug Bauer from Georgia?
What I would just add to that is that I think in terms of mind, body, and soul, and I don't really see how what goes on in any of those domains can be separated. So if you're dealing with persons, you need to be ready to deal with the whole perspective that they have to offer, including their spiritual experiences. And if the therapist is closed to that, they've closed a door to potential communication with the client.
Well, I'm with you guys 100%, and I want to thank you both for being on the show. You know, I like, and I'm going to again and again bring up how the Quakers speak of greeting each other, which is they greet that of God in each other. And, of course, from the Jewish perspective, Martin Buber's I, Thou, Relationships, a book that influenced me a lot when I was a young person before I became a therapist. I want people to really feel free to expect other human beings to treasure you. All of my listeners, I want you to leave the show thinking, I should be treasured by the next person I meet. And if not, I'll move on and find somebody else who's going to treasure me. And I want to treasure the person I'm going to meet. Whether you think we're made in God's image, as I do, but didn't for many, many years, or whether you think you're a product of evolution and nature, you are spectacular, special, unique, and different. and wonderful, and these aren't just cliches. I want you to really think that way. This is Dr. Peter Breggin saying goodbye for now.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Breggin and his lifelong reform work on www.breggin.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.